This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the nutritional voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
Not too bad, Richard. Not too bad at all. I feel like we've said nutritional or dietary or something to do with food and your dietary plan a number of times, but things have moved on. They've moved forward yet again.
Yes, I have started seeing someone about that particular area of my life, and it's been very worthwhile so far. So I started seeing a nutritionist a few months ago. I thought I told you this. I mean, we really don't share much information outside of this podcast, do we? I mean, it's embarrassing how little we actually share. But yeah, I do now go and see a nutritionist once a month in order to make sure that I'm on track.
Okay, so you were off track, were you?
Well, do you know what? So I hit a weight, I might have told you this already, but my playing weight was always around 85, 86 kilos. And not so long ago, I hit 103 kilos. And I think a lot of ex-footballers can relate to this, where it just kind of creeps up on you and you can kid yourself for a little while. You look in the mirror, you think, yeah, I'm okay. You kind of lose a six pack, you lose a few bits, but you're like, no, I'm okay, I'm healthy. And then actually, I just got to the point where I was like, no, I've gone too far now. I need to do something. And I thought that was a good first step. So it's more really the fact that she keeps me accountable. Because every time you go and do like a test when you're there, where it'll go through your body fats and go through where you are in terms of your muscle mass and other bits and pieces. And so it's kind of a bit of a checkpoint every month, which then I quite like that. Because it then comes back to goalkeeping, comes back to the improvements that you might have as a goalkeeper, where, for instance, it might be your plyometric testing, your jump testing, like how much does it improve from the previous month? Well, it's kind of the same idea with this. So that was the thinking behind it.
Well brought back. Does this finally mean an end? An end. Have you cast aside the nonsense of Deliveroo and Uber Eats and Just Eat and all that crap? Has that gone?
No, it's amplified.
Oh no,
it's amplified. I have.
So you're not cooking fresh food?
Deliveroo twice a day, every day.
Well, how does that? Surely your nutritionist is not on board with that.
No, obviously I don't tell her everything. I mean, it's one of them where we look. The results have been good so far. I'm down to 95, by the way. That's the important part of this. So I've gone from 103 down to 95 kilos in, I think, 6 weeks. So we're making really good progress. I don't tell her everything, but as long as things continue on this path, then it's fine. Ultimately, all I've done is I've just really increased the amount that I'm doing in the gym every day, and I've just decreased calories. So although I'm having Deliveroo twice a day, it's not an unhealthy Deliveroo. It's quite a healthy Deliveroo.
Okay, go on then. What's your daily nutrition plan?
The one I get at lunch, it's even called a muscle meal. So, I mean, that has to be healthy.
You are a nutritionist dream. You are. My word. Look, she saw you coming a mile.
I mean,
off.
It's got avocado in it. It's got some cashew nuts, some lettuce, salmon.
A salmon. Right. Okay. Fine. Okay. So basically, you've not really changed what you're eating too much. You're just actually going to the gym more. So really, you need a PT, well, not a nutritionist.
No. I mean, obviously, whatever I'm doing is working. So I've obviously made the right decision because I've lost 8 kilos.
All right, nutritionists are in football clubs, right? Nutritionists work with goalkeepers in football clubs.
They do. And I think that's where, I mentioned earlier, but a lot of ex-footballers will relate to this. I just think it's one of them where actually you come away from that environment. And obviously pretty much every footballer listening to this now, they'll have a routine of sorts where they will have their body fats taken regularly. They'll be doing certain training programs. So the truth is, when you're training to that intensity, it's hard to put on weight. You know, there are players that do, and there were certainly players that were in the fat club, as it was nicely named. But it is hard because you're burning so many thousands of calories every single day, training once, twice a day, and preparing for games, etc. The moment you do retire, so many footballers, and it's the reason you see so many footballers that are overweight, they don't necessarily change their eating habits straight away, because why would you? You've been doing it for 20 years. Why would you suddenly change? But you have to. Like, I realize now, and again, getting older, like, your metabolism slows down that bit. So if you were to continue to eat at the same rate, you will soon balloon, as you've seen so many footballers do. So you have to make major changes when you retire, especially if you're nowhere near as active, which naturally you won't be as when you played.
Was it really called the Fat Club?
There was a fat club, yeah. I think most clubs will have, I mean, it's not particularly nice. They might have now in this day and age. They've probably renamed it. I'm sure they have.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, the slightly overweight club. But yeah, no, it was. There was a fat club where they would come in, and I remember like Neil Ardley and Neil Cox used to be part of it. That's my random memory from Watford. And you'd always see them in the morning when you arrive. They were in the gym doing like a fat burner on the bike every single morning for like 45 minutes just for a period of time until they got their body fat back under that 10%. That was the magic number. You knew if you're having body fats taken and you were in and around 10%, if it was over, you knew that you would be entering the fat club the next week.
Okay, well, plenty coming up as per on the podcast, Richard. All the best goalkeeping action from all four tiers of English football. Clean sheet club, the table for the first time, of course. I said it was going to be five games in, and it is. So the first leader of the clean sheet club will be revealed today. That's exciting, isn't it? We've got some more GKs on their way, and dare I say it, a text talk to surprise you.
Indeed. Well, I am excited. I can tell you that I'm excited. I do wonder if the leader of the clean sheet club is the goalkeeper that's kept five clean sheets in five games. But we shall see.
We shall see. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, starting in the Premier League, and we'll start with the power of recency. Last night, the game at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Liverpool. United beating Liverpool 2-1, and David De Gea. We waited actually until today. Ordinarily, we will continue to do the podcasts on Monday, but circumstances last week and then the fact that it was this game occurring last night and De Gea having the game that he had against Brentford, thought it would be worth just waiting to see how he performed against Liverpool. And fair to say, admirably. Good performance.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, look, it was obviously a major talking point last week. And I guess what I was really impressed with, and I spoke a lot about it last week, was his body language. And I just thought it was infinitely better in this game. And it wasn't just him. It was the entire team. And a lot's been made of that, that, you know, such an overused cliche, but the passion that you could see. And it did really look, the energy just looked different. David De Gea being a prime example, he just looked so much more in tune with the game, so much more connected to the game. When he finally did concede, again, it wasn't one of those where you're, again, I use the word cliche, almost that cliche goalkeeper throwing of arms and almost feel like they're doing it for effect as opposed to being genuinely annoyed. But you could sense he was really frustrated because actually, you know, such a good performance. You want to be rewarded with that clean sheet, and he was unfortunate not to get it. But yeah, look, I thought he did very well. Now, whether the haircut made a difference, I'm not sure. I'm keen to get your thoughts on David De Gea haircut. Is that something that's going to catch on, do you think?
I quite liked it. I prefer footballers and goalkeepers to have a neater, more cropped hairstyle. So I was on board with David De Gea's. I just feel like that makes you more powerful, more dynamic, more explosive. You know, that almost like that jarhead type of hairstyle when you're a footballer, because you've got nothing to worry about then. You don't have to worry about your hair. Just get out there and perform.
Interesting. Well, maybe that made the difference. Who knows? But no, I thought on the whole, very well. Did very well. Made a couple of decent stops. Good reaction save to his right, which I thought he did well to get back on himself and made it look pretty comfortable in the end. Made a really good save on the goal, actually. Nothing more he could do here in terms of the parry, the area of the parry. It was just...
It took a nick, didn't it?
It took a little nick
off the defender of Martinez.
The fact that it's inside as well, it's one of those where you're not really able to get it out and get it anywhere else. It is just a case of getting as firm a hand or wrist as you can on it and just hoping that you get some distance, which he did. And it was just unfortunate that it landed to Salah, wasn't it, who put it in. So, no, look, absolutely nothing more he could have done himself. I thought distribution was fine, obviously a little bit longer in this game, but I thought accurate when going long. I thought all in all, it was a very competent display.
And distribution-wise, quite clear instructions, strict instructions. Do not play out from the back. It seemed that way, didn't it? It was long every single time.
It's interesting, and I like that this was the case, and this is where I give credit to the manager, because, look, I just think that, and we've had some really good examples, actually, this weekend. I'll mention a couple more now who we're going to talk about shortly, but, you know, Edouard Mendy, obviously, being the obvious example, and Nick Pope being another one, where I just think that managers, whether they like it or not, if they do have a goalkeeper then it is playing according to that goalkeeper. It's, you know, sometimes it can be the square peg in a round hole because it's, you know, you want to play a certain style of football, and I get that. But if you don't have the personnel, then can you adapt slightly? Do you have to be so rigid that this is the way I play and that's it, full stop? You know, I hear that expression a lot. Was it plan B is that we do plan A better? Well, no, sometimes you do need a plan B because, you know, Newcastle at the moment, this is, I've really enjoyed this. I questioned, I'll hold my hands up here, I questioned whether it was the right fit, Nick Pope going to Newcastle under Eddie Howe. But I can see already that Eddie Howe has been open enough and flexible enough to say to Nick Pope, like, look, we know what you bring, which, by the way, was another phenomenal performance. Shot stopping is out of this world, aerially fantastic, and he's not bad with his feet. But there was a moment in that game where you could sense he had that moment where he was a little bit unsure. So what did he do? Kicked out of play. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Got no issue with that. Edouard Mendy, on the other hand, didn't do that and obviously tried to play out. I think with David De Gea, I think you've got someone who, again, who isn't bad with his feet, but certainly isn't elite with his feet. So then it is one that, okay, is there a middle ground? Can we find a way in which he still will play when it's on to play, but at the same time, don't take those risks? Because then instantly you give the team a platform to build on. And I think that's what we saw in this game, which we didn't see in the game against Brentford. It was almost, you know, and I think we've seen Arsenal be guilty of this quite a lot in recent years, not so much this season, of course. Now they've got Aaron Ramsdale, they have got someone who's elite with their feet, but we've seen it in recent years where it's almost like they keep doing the same thing expecting a different result. And at some point, I think you just have to accept that if you don't have the personnel, it might take a little bit longer in order to make the changes that Ten Hag will want to make over the period of the next year, 2 years, 3 years. And as long as he's given enough time, then I'm sure in 2-3 years we'll see a completely different style to what we see now. But that's not to say that United, with the players they've got now, can't be a top three, top four team.
Have to mention Alisson before we move on. A couple of very, very good saves in this one. Christian Eriksen from the free kick and Marcus Rashford, the one-on-one for the second goal. Now, I was convinced Rashford was not going to put this away because Alisson is so good at one-on-ones. We saw in the first half a case of Alissonitis with Anthony Elanga, clearly affected by the presence of Alisson, which forced him to hit the post with that shot where he definitely should have scored. But Rashford, in fact, it seems like Premier League players have maybe had, to coin a popular term, the old vaccinations against Alissonitis, because we saw it last week with Wilfried Zaha. We've seen it again, but also two incredible saves immediately after that second goal from Marcus Rashford, again down to his left, saw it late, it was almost behind him as he parried it away, and the tip over from the Christian Eriksen free kick.
Yep, no, I'd agree with that. Tip over from the free kick, that is going right in the top corner. His position was absolutely perfect. Good footwork, gets the top hand up, very powerful spring, gets the fingertips. Just, yeah, perfect bit of goalkeeping for me, that. Really enjoyed that. And to actually mention the Rashford one-on-one, what I found really interesting about this was I really liked Alisson's positioning. Now, a lot of people would look at this and say, oh, he's left a bit more of a gap at the near side. But this, again, is where I think the intelligence comes in, that ordinarily that one-on-one, if a goalkeeper takes up a true position and is central, of course, it is that much easier to start the ball out right. If you're looking at from Rashford's point of view, start the ball out right and whip it into that far post. You know, start it outside the goalkeeper and allow it to curl in far post back towards the middle of the goal. Whereas Alisson takes up a position that basically says to him, go on then, hit that corner if you can, without bending it too much and missing the post, which is always a risk. And credit to Rashford, it's a brilliant finish. He actually gets it up over the floor, off the floor slightly, which then makes a bit of a difference and tucks it right in that corner. But that's the only place he can score because of the fact that Alisson was quite intelligent with his positioning on that one-on-one. But as you say, look, he was very solid. Again, brilliant save down low to his left. Didn't see it till very, very late. Came through bodies, got down, fingertips. Yeah, good angle of dive. No, I thought he was very good again. Nothing more he could have done.
Newcastle 3, Manchester City 3. You've already covered Nick Pope, really, but just to finish on that, it was 7 saves, arguably the 2 from Erling Haaland, the key ones to pick out.
Yeah, I thought for me, goalkeeper of the weekend, comfortably for me. I thought he was brilliant. He looks strong, looks really confident, settled in so well there. You can tell Newcastle fans, not easy shoes to fill, by the way. You know, Dubravka's obviously done so well in recent years, but I thought he's come in and really carried on from where he left off with Burnley over the last few years, and certainly has to be a consideration and a talking point in regards to England once again. But as I mentioned the kick out of play, which I quite liked. Again, I just think that's Nick Pope knowing who Nick Pope is, and you know, some of the stats that I know they produced to show what Nick Pope is about. You know, he's top of so many different categories. It's one of them where Newcastle really do have a goalkeeper at the top of his game at the moment. And some of the saves were excellent. The Haaland one-on-one a couple of times where I thought his distances, his positioning was very good. The technique used when it comes to his spread is excellent. I love the smother down to his left, which is one of them. How many times do we see that as a penalty? I actually really enjoyed Defoe's. It was quite funny. We had the Shearer analysis again, which was classic Shearer. But then we actually had Jermaine Defoe. I say classic Shearer because it was... like, why do they allow him to go through the clips? Like, honestly, is someone not going to say something? Because at least when Jermaine Defoe... I think he's really good, Jermaine Defoe. When he came on, he actually gave it from his point of view. He said on that one there in particular where... Pope's come out and smothered it to his left-hand side. He said as a striker, when you're coming out and you've got a goalkeeper coming that quick off their line and approaching the ball with such positivity that it does make you hurry up as a striker and you'd rush your finish a little bit. And I like that because I thought, well, that's coming from your perspective. You're talking from a position of knowing what you're talking about. Whereas we did just get with Shearer. Oh, watch this one. Yep, this is a great save. Look, this one's to his... Yep, this is to his left. That was to his left, yep. This one, oh, what say? Yep, that was with his feet. That was really good. I think there's one coming up to his right. Yep, to his right. Brilliant. Really, really good. So
I think this could be a new feature.
I think it could be
a new thing. Shearer watch. Like,
is there any actual analysis or not? But no, he was. I thought in particular the smother, so quick off his line. Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that as well as Newcastle played, once again, on balance of play, you know, City are creating so many chances. To actually keep them down to three was quite some performance.
Love that late claim. As well, love to see those, don't you?
Yeah, well, look, this is just, again, it's one of them where it's a good 16 yards. He's obviously starting on the front foot. He's got good positioning on the cross. And it was, you could just sense as soon as it was clipped in, there's a lot of goalkeepers you would expect to still be on their line. There's not many that you would anticipate in the last minute of a game, 3-3, big game, to be 16 yards out. But that's the confidence that he's playing with, just the confidence he's got, full stop. You know, he is that goalkeeper that will come and do that. Aerially, he is so strong. Arguably the strongest, or certainly up there, top two, top three, aerially, I'd say, in the Premier League. And yeah, he's already having a huge impact on Newcastle.
Fulham 3, Brentford 2. David Raya, excellent again, I thought, in this one, despite defeat. He's a Spanish international. He's a Premier League goalkeeper. He's performing week in, week out. Is it fair to say now that he is an elite level goalkeeper, or do we need to see a full season of him in the Premier League? Of course, he was injured for a big chunk of last season in order to call him proper elite.
For me, he's elite. I think that, yeah, look, he's comfortably one of the sharpest, if not the sharpest goalkeeper, you know, moves so well. We spoke a lot about his distribution. And yeah, look, again, a couple of the saves here. The one in particular where he's moving across his goal, it's just the speed at which he gets from his near post across to make the save near enough at the far post. Again, I don't think there are many goalkeepers that can move at that pace and make that save. It will be really interesting. We know, obviously, Brentford's strategy, although that's changed obviously with them being in the Premier League, but it will be really interesting if you do see a top four club come in for him at the end of the season, if he does have a big season. And certainly with the World Cup, I mean, if by chance he does play, which I'm guessing he won't, he'll probably be on the bench, but if he does play, then yeah, I think we're talking about David Raya in a very different light come the end of the season.
At the other end, it was Bernd Leno in for Fulham, two draws and a clean sheet, clearly not enough for Marek Rodak. We said, didn't we, at the start of the season that we'd seen this movie before, Fulham win, and now you'd imagine that might most likely be it for Rodak.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just find it strange. I just think that, and again, two good performances that he played. I don't think there's a great deal more that he can do. I mean, he looks, at times, his technique can look a bit unusual, but it's so effective. So how he's lost his place, I think if I were him, and I'm sure he'll be incredibly frustrated, incredibly angry, because there's just not a lot more you can do. And as you say, now they've made the change, and that's fine. It's, you know, it's obviously a decision from the club, from the manager, but we know how it works with goalkeeping, especially if you're making a change on the back of a couple of good performances. Then, yeah, realistically, it will take a number of errors, an injury, a sending off, or whatever it might be, for him to get another opportunity. And I just wonder whether that's enough for him. You know, you've had two promotions from the Championship to the Premier League. The club, for whatever reason, aren't giving you that opportunity in the Premier League. If you are Marek Rodak, do you hang around? I mean, look, I'm sure he will do for now, but there must be part of him that at some point wants to go and see if he can truly establish himself as the number one in the Premier League elsewhere.
I was talking about this at the weekend, actually, and it's just another amplification of what the goalkeeper market is all about. I know that we've spoken about this quite a lot recently, and you've had some clips out on social media talking about the goalkeeping transfer market and where it is currently at and where it was and where you thought it might go and the crash that seems to have happened. But when discussing Rodak and Leno, my argument was Rodak shouldn't have been dropped. And the counter argument was, well, you know, they spent £8 million on Bernd Leno, so, you know, they've got to put him in. And I just thought, if a club pays £8 million on a striker in today's market overall, you're not saying he should definitely be in the side. I mean, there are, you know, number two, number three strikers at Premier League clubs that cost more than £8 million. Same for a midfielder, same for a defender, but yet again for a goalkeeper. Because you spent £8 million on a goalkeeper, to some people, to most people, that means that goalkeeper then has to be playing.
I mean, look, for me, so much of it is perception. You know, how much of it is actually reality? And I know a lot of lads listening to this, a lot of professionals listening to this will know what I mean, in that you can build a reputation. And if it's a good reputation, then a lot of it isn't based on fact. There aren't many stats, goalkeeping stats, that you could argue are all that true or make that much of a difference. So much of goalkeeping is purely reputation, purely opinion. And this is where I feel for Marek Rodak, because I've got no doubt that his win percentage will be ridiculous. He's had promotion twice with Fulham. I want to say he's had promotion with Rotherham from memory, and another good season in the Championship for them. Like, his record is excellent, and yet he's not spoke about in the same light as a lot of the other goalkeepers, as an example. But yet you look at the stats, you look at the facts, he's a goalkeeper that knows how to win. He's a goalkeeper that knows how to get promotion. How is he not being given more of an opportunity? But again, I think a lot of it then does come back to perception and general opinion, and certain opinions have been made about him, which then is holding him back. And a lot of it is quite simply marketing. You know, I talk often about goalkeepers as products, and I think there are certain goalkeepers that get marketed very well, and certain goalkeepers that will be spoke about in a certain light, and they build this brand, this reputation. It's effectively their branding. And for whatever reason, Marek Rodak's branding isn't quite where it needs to be at the moment.
Everton 1, Nottingham Forest 1, and sound that klaxon. Jordan Pickford with an arrowed assist for Damari Gray in this one. A proper pick out this, wasn't it? Not just a punt.
Yeah, lovely pass. This actually was where I sometimes talk about a lovely kick, because I kind of feel like an assist sometimes can just be, you know, a big boom downfield and a few people miss it and all of a sudden a striker finds himself one-on-one. But no, this was a lovely ball. So this was kind of the whole quarterback, NFL quarterback, where he's got the ball, you've got the wide receiver coming in from the left-hand side, curled run, angled run, and it's just the perfect pass. This is, yeah, a good, what, 50, 60, 70 yards must have been. Right onto his toe, good touch, good finish. Yeah, excellent, excellent pass from Jordan Pickford.
And a good save late on from Dean Henderson as well. Anthony Gordon read that one well, I thought.
Yeah, exactly what I've written down in my notes. Read it well, sensed the danger, and then chose a technique that was suitable in that moment. Bouncing ball, the danger was always going to be that he puts it over his head, got himself to within a yard, which, you know, if he's 2 yards, 3 yards, it's the goal. Got himself to within a yard, and then produced a shape in that moment, which gave himself a really good chance of making the save, which he did.
Over to Elland Road, Leeds 3, Chelsea 0. And sadly, we've got one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper.
Similar to Nick Pope, you mentioned Edouard Mendy earlier on in the show. So we'll just cover this one quickly again. The first goal, he was dispossessed by Brendan Aaronson. He hesitated with the ball at his feet. The goal was conceded. Shay Given gave his analysis in the studio. But before we come to you quickly again, because Alan Shearer was speaking about this on Match of the Day 2, he gave an analysis. And I don't know, I took a bit of umbrage with this, because Shearer's perspective was that Mendy had been given warnings throughout the game before he made that error. Now, he gave three examples of this, Shearer. The second one was the error. That's fair enough. But the first one was a ball that was played back to Mendy. He shifted it to his left beyond the attacker, played a nice ball out to the deep-lying midfielder. Chelsea then lost possession as a result. But I thought, no, that was pretty decent. And then the third example, he's dinked one over the attacker after receiving a back pass. A few phases of play have then occurred. It's come back to Mendy. When he realised nothing was on, he's then clipped one out to the left-sided midfielder. So two of the three examples that Shearer has given as to warning signs for Mendy, he's actually dealt with them quite well.
No, it's ridiculous. It was. Oh, he's had a warning there. What, that time when it got passed back, took an excellent touch and passed it into a sitting midfielder? That's the one. It's kind of like, I don't know, a goalkeeper that gets beaten from distance through their legs. It just squirms through their legs. It's kind of showing two previous examples of perfect pickups. Oh, he's had a warning there. That's come straight down his throat. Okay, he's gathered that one, but he's about to make a mistake. He's had a warning, and he did not see that warning coming. Like, ridiculous. Look, the actual mistake itself, look, my only thing with it is that, again, it's so drummed into the goalkeeper to play, and I get it. And this is the first time, I'm trying to think this through, whether Mendy's been caught before, and it's tricky, because I do think you can get to a point where you become maybe slightly overconfident in that you wait, and if you do get away with one or two, then of course you're not necessarily ever getting to the point where you, like we spoke about with Nick Pope, where, and Nick Pope actually, interestingly, when he kicked it out of play, he did it a moment before where Mendy got to, if that makes sense. Like, Mendy did really push it to the very last second, and then the ball was almost caught under his feet, and he didn't really have the option to do anything, and at that point he's tried to take the striker on, and I mean, even then, he's incredibly unlucky that the tackle is perfect, you know, and the ball just rolls across the line, and then easy tap in. But it is that one, and I think I said it in last week's pod, I just think, and again, I'll mention Nick Pope, it's just having that trigger in your head where you realise, okay, no, this is absolute danger, just pass it for a corner, or just toe poke it out towards the corner flag, or whatever you need to do in that moment. And obviously he didn't have it in this moment. Ordinarily he is playing out well, and he has done for a period of time now, but just in this moment that trigger didn't quite go off. And as I said, he was unlucky in what he ended up doing. Sometimes you do just get away with it. Sometimes he might have got past the striker. Sometimes even if the striker gets a touch, it takes him away from goal and the danger's cleared and it's a close miss. But in this, the moment he'd made that decision to try and take him on, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And ultimately, it was the ultimate penalty.
Thomas Tuchel's comments after the game, I thought, were interesting. I wasn't too sure about them, to be fair. He said he knows himself with these kind of mistakes. I don't know if it is necessary to speak a lot to him. He knows it is a mistake. Everybody in the world sees that mistake, and it is a huge mistake in a crucial time of the match. It does not help. He is the one who is most disappointed. It cost us a lot today.
Yeah, I think I know what he's trying to get at, which I don't mind, which is, yeah, look, as a goalkeeper, and again, we've all had that, and I'm sure that goalkeepers listening in now, where you're walking into the change room, you've just lost the game, you know that you've made a mistake, and you're almost dreading the fact that you're going to sit down in the change room and straight away the manager's going to start screaming at you. And we've all been there, and it's horrible because it's like, look, I know I made a mistake. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't go out there and intentionally drop a ball or intentionally let one squirm through or whatever it might be. Like, it just happens. So I think what Thomas Tuchel's trying to say is that he doesn't need to tell him. He doesn't need to go in there and scream and shout and tell him that he's made a big error, because he knows he has. So I think that's what he's trying to get at. At the same time, and again, all goalkeepers are different. And again, it's very much a case of a goalkeeper being able to analyse, assess their own performance and continue to move forward and build their own confidence. But it is quite nice as well when a manager maybe comes over and just lets you know that, look, it's one of those things, forget about it, move on, you've done great for us, etc., etc. And I think a lot of the best, and I'm sure Thomas Tuchel probably has done this, because I think a lot of the best managers have that realisation that as much as goalkeepers in the Premier League are very strong characters and they need to be in order to perform at that level with the scrutiny, it is always nice to know that your boss is very much understanding as to what's happened and maybe doesn't hold a grudge or any ill feeling towards you because of a genuine error.
And the final three to finish off the Premier League, Tottenham 1, Wolves 0. Jose Sarr good again in this one. A really good save down low to his left from Heung-min Son that he parried, I think, onto the post. It wasn't properly picked up in commentary. I did have to slow it down a number of times, but I think he got a touch to that. Crystal Palace 3, Aston Villa 1. Some great distribution as well by Sarr in that game as well. Palace 3, Aston Villa 1. Wilfried Zaha and Emi Martinez. Bit of afters from the pair after the former scored that penalty. And Bournemouth 0, Arsenal 3. Just to mention a couple of colourful moments again for Aaron Ramsdale. He's always entertaining, isn't he? There's always something going on with Aaron Ramsdale. And yet again, proof that he has such a unit with his defence. They really are together, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It's the expressions. You know, he's got a lot of expressions, and, you know, he certainly, I use the word passionate again, that's one thing you can never ever say about Aaron Ramsdale, that he doesn't play with passion. You know, he's certainly one of the most, if the most, passionate goalkeeper out there, absolutely loving what he's doing. You know, you'll get the odd moment, and it was an interesting one, the side volley that he's gone to do, and again, I kind of understand why he was, and for those that haven't seen it, essentially gone to do a side volley. There was the striker there who then feints to go to block it and then pulls away. So in theory, he's done nothing wrong. He hasn't actually touched Aaron Ramsdale or got close to him, but it is that fake where he's kind of gone to do it. Then he's pulled back, which has obviously put Aaron Ramsdale off, and he ends up duck hooking the side volley, and it ended up almost being quite dangerous. But in the end, got away with that one. But you could sense why he was annoyed, because it was the striker's movement which had put him off. And the free kick towards the end, again, just the expressions, the fact that they are, as you say, very much together, desperate to keep a clean sheet. And I like this, as much as there are different types of goalkeepers and different energies, I'd use that word, different energies that goalkeepers play with, Aaron Ramsdale is who he is. And it's something that I'll say to all young goalkeepers, like, don't try to be something that you're not. You know, if you feel a certain way, if you play a certain way, be who you are and be a full expression of that. So I've got absolutely no issue with that. To mention Jose Sarr, another good performance, as you mentioned. Good footwork for the tip over. Brilliant distribution. The side volley, the running side volley. Haven't seen that for a little while, but where he's caught the cross, he's come sprinting to the edge of the box and almost in one movement. Brilliant side volley out to the left wing. Good 70-yard pass into the path of his winger. So, no, another very good performance. Sadly, to no avail, as, of course, they lost to Spurs.
It is the EFL overview, starting, of course, in the Championship, where there were top stops and clean sheets apiece for Anthony Patterson, Tim Krul and Jamie Jones. Patterson pedalling back to tip over from Jacob Brown as Sunderland won away at Stoke. Krul touching onto the bar from Andreas Volkslammer as Norwich won at home to Millwall. And Jones at the double, first keeping out Joby Bellingham and scampering across his line to deny Sam Crossgrove in Wigan's win at Birmingham. For me, that last one, perhaps a save of the weekend contender.
Yeah, it was excellent. How he got down to it, I'm not too sure, but moved really quickly to his right-hand side. The speed at which he got himself down to get fingertips around the post, excellent. And a couple of the others you mentioned there. Patterson, got to give huge credit. It's another big result, and we talk a lot about mentality on this show, and that's something, or certainly a word, what is it, a mentality monster, as Jurgen Klopp would describe him, because I just think that stepped in last season, played some huge, huge games and came through them very confidently, very successfully. And again, the start of this season, you know, a lot of rumours as to whether Sunderland will bring in a goalkeeper, but again, he's performing very, very well every time he steps out there. So a huge well done to him. Tim Krul, yeah, good save. A lot of movement on this ball from distance. And in the end, it was vital fingertips that managed to get over the bar.
Things could have been a whole lot different at the Hawthorns had West Brom's David Button not made an excellent one-on-one save early on in an eventual 5-2 hammering of Hull. Dan Backman with another trio of very good saves to earn Watford a point in another goalless draw for Preston. And Ari Muric of Burnley playing out and conceding against Blackpool, but then point saving when denying Jerry Yates late in the game.
Yeah, so the West Brom game was a really interesting one, because in the end it looks very comfortable being 5-2, but a couple of crucial saves from David Button, top hand to his left, and then a one-on-one which he managed to tip onto the bar, excellent saves, and that really did give them the platform to then kick on back end of the first half, second half to win that game. Dan Backman really has started the season on fire for Watford, it's fair to say. You know, pretty much every game he's been standout, man of the match, I want to say, in at least three of the five. And I thought he was excellent again in this one. Brilliant reaction save, which it's one of those, no doubt, commentators will look at and say straight at him anywhere else he scores. But it's actually the fact just before the shot's taken, you can see as he sets, he gets his hands up in preparation to give himself a better chance to make that save. And I think if his hands are that little bit lower, I don't think he's able to react in time to make this save. So I thought that was very, very good indeed. Full stretch save to his right, really quick feet, very powerful, top right as well. I thought the reaction to this was good, but I think it was more the fact the cross has come in and he hasn't made the decision to come. He actually drops to his line, gives himself maximum reaction time, and is quite patient, because this is one of them where the cross may even drift towards the far post, but he makes that decision to drop, and in the end is able to react very quickly. Very good save. Muric, yeah, big save at the end. As you say, it's one of them, and I guess this really highlights for a goalkeeper how, you know, you talk about a misplaced pass. It wasn't even a misplaced pass. We're talking maybe half a yard off where he wanted to pass it, but it just shows the difference. You know, wasn't quite able to hit his target in the way that he wanted to, the sitting midfielder, maybe half a yard off with a pass, and unfortunately the sitting midfielder then loses the ball, which means it turns into a one-on-one, ends up as a goal. But it's such fine margins when you are the type of goalkeeper that's playing in the way that obviously not only Muric, but so many goalkeepers play now.
The complaint from pundits and fans alike was that that goal allowed Blackpool to get back in the game. Burnley were cruising 2-0 up. It made it 2-1. They did then go 3-1 up.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think there's too much blame that you can attach to Murich for allowing Blackpool back into the game. And lastly, Dan Bentley, captaining Bristol City to a win over Cardiff. He was excellent, wasn't he? So good in this one. Live on Sky Sports for everyone to see. So good at those one-on-ones.
Yeah, brilliant. It's, you know, we talk a lot about distances, and I thought the first one in particular, which crucial moment of the game, drops to then engage, and again, point of impact. The shape that he pulls, and we talk about goalkeepers' one-on-one technique, he's up there with the best. You know, the way in which he spreads his legs, spreads his body. You actually look at that point of impact, there's not a lot of places that the striker can put it. And in the end, it kind of hits his shoulder, I think, and goes over the bar. Brilliant save. A good spread on the angle. Again, the decision to engage. It's one of these where if it does get past him, he's way out of position and people may question whether he should be coming out on the angle. But he realises he can get to within a yard or so, which means, again, given the shape that he pulls, it's very hard to get the ball by him. And then the save towards the end, one-on-one, where he gets down with his left hand. The reading of the situation, I thought, was brilliant, because a lot would have continued their movement forward, tried to engage, probably brought them down, probably given away a penalty, possibly sending off, etc., etc. He makes a decision to hold, and the power that he's got when he gets down to his left, you see he dives full stretch. It really was a top save, and again, a crucial point of the game. And this was one of those games, you actually look at it, there wasn't a great deal in it in terms of balance of play, but ultimately the difference in this game was Dan Bentley.
Into League One, James Trafford doing his best to bail out a Bolton defence when dealing with the dodgiest of back passes towards an empty net. He got there, but as we so often see, especially this season already, to be fair, Sheffield Wednesday scored from the next phase of play. Nice to see Luke Southwood bag 3 points, a clean sheet, and two important saves for Cheltenham at Exeter. He'd been on the wrong end, hadn't he, of seven when the teams met in the EFL Cup 11 days earlier, so that was good to see. And thou shall not pass Fleetwood's Jay Lynch at the moment. He's faced 43 shots in the past two games and shipped zero. Derby frustrated on Saturday, and Max Striek, Wickham's latest number one, confidently keeping it clean on his chairboys debut in a 3-0 triumph of Barnsley.
Yeah, some top performances. I want to mention Luke Southwood in particular, because a couple of excellent saves here. Really, really sharp save, sharp goalkeeper. Certainly the way he got down to his right-hand side, the speed at which he got down, and then the tip over as well. And as you mentioned, he did play in the team, the weakened team that obviously conceded the seven goals the other day. But I think for me, this is where, you know, again, it feels like mentality very much is the theme of this show. I think to have the mentality where you keep putting yourself into the firing line, and you come back from a game like that in the way that he has. And certainly, you know, there's not a lot he could have done in that game where they did ship seven. And since then, again, a couple of really competent displays. And he's going to need to be big for them this season as well. From sort of early signs, it is one of them where, obviously, new manager, you know, no doubt sort of bedding into a slightly tweaked style of play and what have you. So it will be a big, big season for him. Jay Lynch, yeah, inspired. You know, again, talk about how a goalkeeper looks and playing with a certain energy. The save that he made to his left-hand side, it might have just taken a bit of a nick. He's ended up saving it with his right hand, but really big, firm right hand, right wrist. Real top save, and he just looks so sharp. And again, I've written the word inspired because it was one of them. And you can sense when a goalkeeper has that kind of look about them where you do just feel you are not going to concede today.
And finally, League Two, where Owen Evans provided a cheeky bit of improv for Walsall in preserving a point at Gillingham, kicking a loose ball off for a corner and taking quite a hit in the process. Very nearly a second klaxon of the day at Rodney Parade. Ross Doohan sending Kane Hemmings clear, only for Newport's Nick Townsend to make himself big and play a big part in the home side's comeback victory over Tranmere. And also very nearly a second trumpet in the space of a week. Paul Farman testing opposite number Pete Jameson in the wind as Barrow beat Harrogate and bagged three consecutive home wins for the first time in 50 years. A huge save from Farman late on in that one too.
Yeah, huge save. And as you say, it was one of them. When you saw him strike that ball, and I guess you're going to get a lot of this at the likes of Barrow. You know, Grimsby, I remember as well, you'd always get this where a keeper kicks it and it just didn't look real. You know, it kind of bounced on like the penalty spot and nearly went into the roof of the net. Yeah, phenomenal. You mentioned Townsend as well. Top save this. I just thought reading a situation similar to the Henderson save that we spoke of earlier, that I think bouncing ball, reading a situation, kind of gambling and guessing as to what the striker is likely to do, you know, working out the probability in a split second, percentages, what are they likely to do? And I thought the fact he almost did like a star jump, and in the end it was an excellent save.
And I did mention at the top of the show that we do have a text talk, didn't I?
You did. I didn't know about this.
Yes. So this one is, in fact, from Mr. Paul Farman himself.
Ah, nice. Good work. You've done this without me even knowing.
I did. I thought I'd surprise you. So this is regarding that late save, which was a really important save because it bagged them those 3 points. Great start to the season for Barrow. Here he is, Mr. Paul Farman, talking about that save.
Hello, it's Paul Farman here, Barrow AFC. And I'm going to talk you through my save at the weekend. So it was late on into the game. They've broke down the left-hand side. And the lad's obviously shaped up as if he's going to fire the ball across the box or have a shot. So I've kind of took my position as if to where I can affect both. And when I've had a quick scan to see who's arriving in the box, I've seen their nine, one of their lads, pointing at the front post as if he wants it. The ball fired across. So our defender is obviously tracked his man across to the front, and it's been a pullback pass, a box pass to where one of their lads has arrived late. At this time, he's probably about 8 yards out. He's let the ball come across to his right foot, and as our defenders slid to block that, he's chopped it back in on his left foot. But at this time, I felt like he's in total control, but his whole focus was on the ball. His head was down, and I felt like I could make it more in my favour of being a block instead of a save. But I felt like I could make the distance that small whilst he was doing that. So I've rushed him, being as obviously big as possible and as square on as possible, and trying to keep my body shape is square on. And I've managed to save it with my trailing leg, and we've managed to go on then and obviously keep a clean sheet, which is great, and also take the 3 points from it.
So there we go, a comprehensive review, much like Liam Roberts, that one really broke that down. Great to hear it from a goalkeeper's perspective. He did also mention the goal that was nearly scored that you picked up on there. Do you want to hear his reaction to that one?
Go on.
And I forgot to mention my shot on target that I hit the bar. I just whacked it.
You see, this is it. That's when we spoke earlier about, you know, I spoke about the Jordan Pickford pass, and sometimes I will just say it's a lovely kick. I love the honesty there, that he's not trying to claim that he was trying to put it in the top corner. He did just whack it, and he did, by the way. I don't think, yeah, the distance, that's got to be up there in terms of world record. Like, from where he kicked it, that's got to be a good, what, 85 yards? It's unbelievable.
Loved it. Loved his honesty. And he also said to mention to Rich as well that last week, I think it was last week, do you remember the goal that was nearly scored by Jack Rose, and we berated the striker Fadahunzi for taking it from him? That was against Barrow, and Farman said their keeper's kick wasn't on target, it was going wide.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. We have been corrected, or I have been corrected. Clean Sheet Club. Yep, it's that time of the show. And as Matt mentioned, as soon as I've finished this, we will have the first table of the week. And we start in the Premier League. Hugo Lloris, enchanté. Aaron Ramsdale, Coastal Clear. Ilian Millier, de nouveau enchanté. What are you doing here? Robert Sanchez, 2 and 3. Jamie Jones, holding the fort. Freddie Woodman, sound the siren. 5 in a row, Dan Backman, 1 every other. Dean Bouzanis, highest ever level of cleanliness. Wes Fodringham, hot fod. Anthony Patterson, championship account opened. Ethan Horvath, winning in Wales. And Dan Bentley, double up. Into League One, Max Triek, EFL first. David Stockdale, philanthropic goalkeeping. Jack Stevens, 2 from 3. Luke Southwood, woulda, coulda, no shoulda. Jay Lynch, 0-0, 0-0. Joe Wildsmith, 0-0, 0-0. Michael Cooper, pill not grim. Lucas Bergstrom, strong. Christian Walton, hat-trick. Into League Two, Paul Farman on the board, Nick Zanev, Kiwi keeper, Glenn Morris, goalless Jills, Owen Evans, stalemate Sadlers, Max Crocombe, back to back, Jack Rose, Jack to Jack, Sol Brin, win for Swindon.
Very good, Richard. Very, very good. So we're onto the table that you mentioned there. And I think you've called it already, as most people know, right? Who has bagged 5 clean sheets in his opening 5 games of the Championship and indeed his new club. It is, of course, go on.
Mr. Freddie Woodman.
Yes, Mr. Freddie Woodman. 5 clean sheets in 5 games. What a start to life at Preston North End. In fact, only one team has ever done... Oh, no, that's wrong. I don't know if it's one team that has ever done that. But the last team to achieve that, 5 clean sheets in their opening 5 games of the season in the Championship was...
Go on.
Bury in the 98-99 campaign.
Yeah, how was I ever going to get that? I mean, you said that as
well,
if...
I don't know.
I thought you were going to say...
Good knowledge of that time.
I thought you were going to say, like, Watford, the season that you played. And it's, I knew it wasn't that because I think... Well, I don't think I ever kept 5 in a row. So I was just kind of expecting you to say something where I'd have been like, oh, yeah, oh, I should have got that. Bury, 98. Who's going to get that?
I bet a lot of people would get that. It was quite a memorable campaign. In fact, here you go then. Who was the goalkeeper? Who was the goalkeeper at that time? Because I'm not going to blow my own trumpet, but I did know this. I went back to look at the stats behind it, but I did know who the goalkeeper was before I looked.
Right,
and you should know because he's been a guest on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. And we spoke about it, in fact.
Right, so that's what, okay. All right, now you put me under pressure because I don't know.
I have.
And the one that I'm going to mention, I don't know if he even played for Bury, but I'm going to go Dean Kiley.
How has he pulled that out of the bag?
Yes.
How has he pulled that
amazing.
Out of the bag?
For someone who, and you know this is true, I've got the worst memory, which, by the way, I do blame on football and concussions and whatever, but I've got the worst memory. But when it comes to goalkeeping, just I have moments of inspiration.
You do. You really do. Fair play. I'll give you that, mate. I'll give you that. In fact, just quickly, for giggles, I was looking at the stats behind that season, and I do now remember because they went up, didn't they, consecutive seasons from the lower tier up into the Championship. I think Dean Kiley was there for the second one of those. Made a really good save, actually. Penalty save against Watford, didn't he? Tommy Mooney denied, if you remember that. I think that was on the last game or the penultimate game that saw them go up. It was their second season in the Championship, or Division 1, I believe it was, back then. They lost one of their first 9. He kept 7 clean sheets in that time. And then they went on an horrendous run and ended up going down. But they went down on goals scored. They had a better goal difference than Port Vale at the time. But that was when the Football League switched it to goals scored. So they went down, they switched it back the following year after thinking... Yeah, that's not really fair. That doesn't work.
Cheers. Cheers. Back to League One you go.
Unbelievable, isn't it? And also, the 6th game where the clean sheet run of 5 consecutive clean sheets was broken, they didn't make it a 6th, was against Birmingham. Dean Kiley didn't play because he was on international duty with the Republic of Ireland. Who came in for a one-off appearance at 40 years old for Bury in that game?
Oh, okay. Again, you're testing me. I don't know if I know this one. I feel like I might do. Go on, hit me.
Bruce Grobbelaar.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. Well, we really are finishing this pod on a high, aren't we?
We are. It was at a time when he was in the nether regions of non-league. He'd been at Chesham. Neil Warnock brought him in. Clearly didn't trust his number 2 or 3. So brought in Grobbelaar. 1 game, out you go.
Well, there you go. I mean, they say you learn something every day. So I kind of feel like to all of our listeners, you have got your pointless information for the day.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, a few more movers and shakers. Just a week to go now before that transfer window slams shut. Those movers are... We've mentioned him a few times before. Max Striet from Livingston to Wickham on a performance-related deal. Pontus Dahlberg, Watford to Gothenburg, that's undisclosed. David Robson, Hull to Crawley on a 6-month loan. And Joe O'Shaughnessy from Wolves to Bradford on a season-long loan.
Yep, a few interesting moves there. The one I'll touch on is one that that lad that I work with, Pontus Dahlberg, who has gone back to Gothenburg, which was I think a very good move for him at his stage in his career. Of course, been in the Sweden squad several times now. Didn't quite work out for him last season and felt he was a little bit unfortunate at both Doncaster and Gillingham because on the whole, his performances were quite good. But sometimes, I guess, the situation doesn't quite work out for you. So for him to go back there, hopefully get a number of games under his belt, knock on the door for the Swedish squad again, I'm hoping it'll be a good move for both him and potentially Watford longer term as well. The deal being structured in such a way where they can benefit on how Pontus does further down the line. Hopefully in time it will yield results for Watford too.
Okay, Richard, that is pretty much us. But just to say, in a week where we've spoken about goalkeepers scoring, of course, Senny Dieng scoring last week or the week before at Sunderland, history has been made in the USL League One. Just 20 seconds into the game between North Carolina FC and Union Omaha, Kevin Piedrahita, the goalkeeper for Union Omaha, scored a goal, mate. A punt from his own box. So there you go.
There you go. Big news.
Really, really big news. Thought we'd just give him a shout out because always worth it when a goalkeeper scores a goal. But Richard, that's us for another week. We'll be back next week as per with Between the Sticks. Thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away. Oh, wow.